I would hear about the Israeli aggressions and bombings. Later, when I grew up, I saw how they invaded and infiltrated into villages. And took people prisoner, and killed people, and destroyed houses. Then the idea of standing against Israel was stirred inside me. And the thought of resisting them and retaliating was also coming to me. This was the result of being oppressed and seeing people being oppressed and suffering when they have not committed any crime or assault against anyone. None of the people from the Lebanese villages were hurting them or entering their land, which is originally our land. Palestinian resistance began. I began to hear on the news and from people about organizations and the names of organizations. Then I began to have an urge to join these organizations that worked for the liberation of Palestine and fought against the Israeli enemy. Then I got to know a group of people who had made a group under the name of Lebanese National Resistance. Under the Fatah Brigade, whose goal was the liberation of Palestine and Jerusalem. After the Israelis brought in 30,000 soldiers and spread them inside Lebanon, we began to move rockets to this area here, and we directed them towards Kiryat Shmona. This is what I was accused of and was taken prisoner for. This is the last thing I did before I was taken after 15 days of torturing me and hitting me and assaulting me in the Ashajara school in Tyre. I was moved to occupied Palestine. After this operation, I was followed by the Israelis. They watched me carefully through their spies and collaborators, and they followed me everywhere. I then stopped sleeping in my house every day. I was moving from one place to another. Every day I would sleep in a different village with friends and relatives. Then one day, it started getting cold and rainy. So I came home to get some clothes for my little baby girl that was in the village of Al-Bazuri, where I lived and where Sayyid Hassan comes from. I came home, it was dusk, and I was feeling cold and sleepy. So I just slept in my house. This is it. I slept and I woke up in the middle of the night to the sounds of pounding on my door and soldiers shouting. They broke into the house and my daughter and I were asleep. They put the gun to my head and started hitting me. And one of them even directed the machine gun towards my daughter. They disagreed on whether they should shoot me or not, and they ended up taking me barefoot in my nightgown. Earlier they had cut off the electricity from the entire village. It was dark and I couldn't see anything. They took me down these stairs barefoot and took me to an interrogation and torture station, to the military authority station in Tyre, which used to be the Ashajara school. and they brought me in. It was all very horrific. Vehicles, soldiers, and all kinds of weapons, and the sounds of people shouting. They were being tortured. From the moment I entered, the scene was horrific. They put me in a room, in this area. It was a very small room they tortured me in, covered with a black cloth. And this used to make you feel terrified. Later they took me to occupied Palestine. And I was accused of aiding the resistance. Their sentence was that I wouldn't leave prison alive. But later I got out through a swap, the big swap that occurred in 1984. It's true that every prisoner hopes and loves to be free. But when you come out, you see that there are still so many who are prisoners, and parts of your land are still occupied. The Israelis were still in this land. They would enter whenever they wanted. They destroyed whatever they wanted. The most hurtful thing for me was, after I came back to my children, and I wanted to hold my youngest daughter, she would tell her grandmother, "Look, this lady wants to hold me." And I would shout and say, "No, I'm your mama." She would tell me, "No, my mama's gone. The Israelis took her. You're a woman, you're not mama." And it was hard for me these first few months. She was the youngest and wasn't old enough to understand when the Israelis took me. Even the people around me were crying, because I was shouting hysterically, "No, no, don't say I'm some woman." And the people thought, "Poor Khadija, she went crazy in prison." One year after I left prison, I felt like coming back to see the place where I was tortured by the Israelis. But I found it all destroyed, all rocks burnt, and I thank those who destroyed it. Nothing was left of its aggressiveness and cold-heartedness except this. It reminds me of the cells I was put in, because it is exactly like it. Wherever there is ugliness and dirt and atrocity, you know it is what the Israelis have left behind. This water reservoir, it was the only place that connected us to the outside world. We saw it when we were taken out for some sun. There were high walls and iron wires, but we could see that reservoir from the prison. There it is, there's the reservoir we could see. This was all we could see. We didn't know where we were, but this showed us something from the outside world. This is the prison, can you see it? This was originally a factory for processing tobacco. The Israelis used the basements to make prison cells. This was where they would put the tobacco to be manufactured. And they brought us here, to where they put the tobacco to be manufactured and to rot. They called these the windows. If you see those lines up there, the distance between each line was the size of a cell. These cells were this big, and they used to put 5 or 6 women in them. We were not able to see this place from the cell. All we could see was the reservoir, which meant a lot to us because it represented life outside the prison gates. All we could see was the prison walls and the walls of the cells. And so this was something from the outside world that would give us some kind of hope and happiness, because it was linked to the outside world. Concerning the inner cells, there were writings. We had written our painful memories in them, about our tortures and sufferings, important memories that were dear to us. But I did not find them when I came. They had painted the walls. Here we are just showing you an example of Israeli civilization that they brought with them to Lebanon. This is the place they used to put the prisoners in. On the ground, with the insects and the dirt. People from all parts of the community, doctors, school teachers, students, farmers, they all came and tasted a part of Israeli civilization. As you can see, it's an underground tunnel. Behind this wall, they had separated it into small cells, where they would put the prisoners and torture them. And they witnessed the worst Israeli atrocities in the south of Lebanon. This place was dirty, damp, and lonely, and filled with dirt and insects. And it was very tight. They would crowd the prisoners in a very small cell, and they were forced to relieve themselves in front of each other, and then they had to sleep there. I hope you can see the Israeli and American civilization which they ask us to apply in our land. Here I can see Palestine from this small piece of holy liberated land, which was blessed by the blood of martyrs. From here I can see all of Palestine. And I try to imagine how the Zionists first occupied Palestine and began to creep bit by bit until they brought their settlements inside our land, Lebanese land. Even Palestine is not theirs. They came bit by bit until they reached here and put their settlements here. They used them for spying on and terrorizing the people in these villages. The job of these settlements is to terrorize the people who live here. This was before the liberation, but now after the liberation, these settlements don't mean anything anymore. People come and go day and night, and the settlement seems like tombs that don't mean anything to anyone. People might care for graves and visit them, but no one cares for these, and no one reads the Fatiha. This too is the Khiyam prison, which witnessed so much of the pains and agonies that our sisters and brothers went through because of the Israelis. These are like the prison cells that I was in Reji, and in the Ramla prison in Palestine. Anything left behind by the Israelis is depressed and ugly. These are the women's cells. And these are the interrogation and torture rooms. Let them come now to torture someone. Who could come now to do that? This is the pole and piece of wood that were used to crucify the holy and blessed fighters for many days and nights under the rain and snow. Dear. Come here, Muhammad. There are cluster bombs over there. This is where our building was. All my children, along with their families, lived here. It was a four-story building. There were also 6 or 7 cars in front of it, and many of the neighbors' houses were gone too with the cars. Only God Almighty can avenge for us. On the day of judgment, we shall judge between them. There will be a righteous ruling then. No one can help them then. Not the US, George Bush, or Condoleezza Rice. They will be questioned on everything, killing the children and the innocent, and destroying the homes. Then what will they do? Who will save them from God's punishment? Muhammad, please come over here. There are cluster bombs over there. This is Israel's fingerprints. Ugliness and destruction and nothingness. This is for Hassan. It's what's left of the house. This equals Israel, the US, and all the Arab leaders who help them. Please put these in the car to take them home. Praise be to God. Praise be to God. I raised them to love their land and nation, and to love God Almighty. And we used to teach each other that we should be prepared to give sacrifices, to give our lives and money and all we have, for the sake of our principles and our nation. He did what he wanted and what he was prepared for. He defended his people and his land, and the word of "there is no God but God." Dear Hassan, my love. Congratulations, my love, congratulations. I ask God Almighty to accept your martyrdom with the greatest acceptance and to give me patience. What could make you more proud than being the mother of a martyr like Fatima? How much more proud could you get? What is hard is his departing. I don't cry because he became a martyr, but because I miss him. Believe me, that once somebody asked me, "Why are you laughing?" when it was my son who became the martyr. I told her that it's the happiness of victory and of the people's high hopes and high morale that has filled my heart and left no place for grief. If grief comes, it will find no place. My heart is filled with joy. This is what is so special about this war.